Athletics. So these are the papers you have been reading?
Yeah, two papers. Both from PhD.
Okay. Okay. So do these papers talk about model of data?
This paper is external based, it's different.
But it is also about online estimation of performance, right? And that's in a dynamic environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make changes dynamically and then, and each time you make a change, you run it.
Yeah.
And observe the performance. So what are sort of the drawbacks of this work?
I think also this work I read.
Okay. Okay, so this is, where was this published?
This is in Eurosys, this is in using some of it.
Okay. This one seems to be HP Labs technical report. In the same as the Eurosys version?
Yeah, almost.
Pretty much the same, yeah. I have the Eurosys version. You can find it online, I think.
Okay. Yeah, so we, our
and
next
this is another paper in using the notebook.
Yeah, I just noticed that from your reference.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about these papers and maybe start with this one.
Yeah. So what they do is that they have two components, just like we have. One is that they have application controller.
Mm-hmm.
One is the node controller.
Okay.
So what the application controller does is that it's just, it tries to find the application output
mm-hmm.
based on the resource allocation of a particular application.
Mm-hmm.
So each application has its application controller. So in a way, it's just a model for application, predicting application output under different resources for the application.
I see.
And the node controller is just, it's a global thing. So they have a distributed environment.
Mm-hmm.
For each physical host, they have each node controller.
Okay.
So what node controller does, based on the application controller's request, resource request, they subdivide the request, the actual allocation of the request, the decision is based, is done by that node, based on the other applications, other VMs, or priority values based off SLA.
Okay.
Something like that. So that's the two things they do. And in the application controller, they have a model.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a linear model.
Mm-hmm.
So what the model combines is that, one important thing is that they measure the application, is absolute application performance metric. They model the normalized application performance metric.
Mm.
So what is that? Is that each application has its desired application performance metric and your observed application performance metric.
Mm-hmm.
So the ratio of these two, they say the normalized application performance metric.
Mm-hmm.
Why they use it? They use it because they say that each application performance metric is different. So in order to balance those things or make this symmetrical, they use the normalized application performance metric rather than actual performance metric in the model.
Mm-hmm. So how is the model maintained?
The model is created. Okay, the model equation is two things. It has its observed performance and also past resource allocations. And that continuously gets updated. Because in the equation, you have the interval of past allocation as well as past performance.
Mm-hmm.
So you update the model continuously based on your observations. And resource allocation, you know it already.
So the model has two parts. One is resource allocation, the other is for observed performance.
Yeah, they combine the two things in predicting application performance.
But, I mean, aren't these dependent on each other, that the performance is dependent on the resource allocation? So they have multiple values in the model, the resource allocation, so multiple parameters. So, okay. So then there are resource parameters, there are performance parameters.
Two parameters.
So input and output, is it?
No, they say that the application output is a function of past performance. As well as resource allocation, past resource allocation.
I see. So the future performance, predicted performance, depend on past performance.
As well as recent and past allocation.
Recent and past allocation.
They go with up to two intervals, like k-1 and k-2, if you are in time k. So they say that with two intervals, the model was accurate enough.
So how exactly is the model in their case? Is there an equation or is it?
Yeah, it's a control theory equation.
This is the model. This is a typical predictive control method used in control theory.
Okay. So this is just a linear model of.
It's a linear model. So the assumption is the entire model may not be linear, but there will be many steady operation points, and within the small margin, small area around the steady point, you can assume that it's linear. So what they need to do is they need to constantly update this model to make sure that whenever the system is in a steady operation point state, they find out the new parameters for the linear model.
Okay. So these are, this is the performance at time k, is it? Normalized performance at time k. These are the performance at time k minus 1, performance at time k minus 2.
Mm-hmm.
What are these U's?
U is the allocation.
Okay, past allocation. Okay, so they do not take any, I guess the competition is somehow captured in these past performance. Right? Because if you have more competition, the performance will be lower, and sort of keep updating your estimate of performance by updating these past performance values, right? By using the past performance values, which are an indicator of competition, observed performance. Makes sense, yeah. Okay, so they do not have sort of this full application model, but sort of modeling only for the next. So in some sense, they cannot make these are the new allocations, right? The new allocations is UA of K.
Mm-hmm.
And then the past allocation. These are past allocations. So I guess in our case, can we use a model like this?
So we are very different. We are using machine learning. We are trying to find out the internal model between that captures the relationship between the resource allocation and performance. But this is just purely based on forecasting. So in this method, it's not trying to find out that internal model. It's trying to find out what's the next performance will be based on what we have observed of the past performance.
That's true, but I guess my question is that can we use this to do our form of dynamic resource allocation?
Not really, because we need to do at different intervals, we need to do at the performance, the prediction.
True, but they also provide a performance prediction model, right?
Yeah, performance, but we have to do that. Let's say we have to use it at K.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to know what is the performance of at k based on different values of u0 and u0 k minus 1.
UA?
Yeah, the resource allocation. We are changing it. We are not just looking at the actual resource usage at k minus 1 and k.
Oh, this is utilization based.
No, not utilization based, but actual resource allocation in k and k minus 1.
Yeah, but don't we have that also in the resource allocations at time k and k minus 1?
We know it, but how can you say that, let's say, at k we use 20% CPU. We cannot say what will be the performance at the 25% CPU.
But isn't that what they are trying to do here? Is the current allocation is UA, which is if I change to 25%, then what is the performance that I get? Because the previous allocation was 20% at k minus 1.
You want to use this to replace ANN?
No, I'm asking if we can actually replace the ANN-based model with something like this for the same dynamic reallocation, the way we are formulating it. Because all we need is a prediction of performance at a certain
that is
at a given resource allocation, right?
That is
because this, I guess we are talking about the next step in our work, which is how do we do dynamic resource
sort of
reallocation.
Thing. Yeah, the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So we are not tied to ANN anymore. No, we are open to suggestions. Some questions.
No, I'm just saying that this is a method to update the model in an online fashion, because our model does not have the ability to be updated in an online fashion, because we have to retrain the whole model all over again.
Mm.
But so our goal is to now, the next step is to do a dynamic online update, or sort of incremental update of the model.
No incremental AI? No? I would be surprised that there's no such thing. Do you know any online ANN training?
So I'm not saying that we should use this, but I think that we should probably compare against this.
I think you should. I agree with you. Should be.
You mean it can only be trained offline?
No, there should be.
Yeah, there should be some online fashion, right?
Yeah. Some incremental update.
Yeah. It must be.
So we could do that, and we could compare against this stuff, because I think this also allows us to predict performance in an online dynamic fashion, right? I think that's interesting, because we have something to compare against.
Mm-hmm. Accuracy.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue that this is actually simple, because, you know, you don't need any complex model construction. This does not tell you how the entire application model looks like, but it tells you what the performance at the next instant is going to be, given a certain allocation.
Mm-hmm. It may not be trivial to implement it, because you need to use this system identification to train these parameters. I think they use least square root.
Recursive root.
And then you need to use this function. So this is the control function that does the control. You need to minimize this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's not just single stack. Or if the authors can give us the implementation, then that will be easier. But it may take some time to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I mean, I'm just thinking from a reviewer standpoint. Mm-hmm. Reviewer might ask that, okay, now you're applying your ANN model to do online performance prediction, and you're going through this complex process of, you know, incrementally retraining the ANN. The ANN actually does much more than what you want it to do right now, which is in the performance prediction at the next instant. It tries to predict performance for all possible resource allocation values, right? So I think the reviewer question would be, why do you need, you know, that complexity? Can we do something similar like what these guys do?
So instead of the ANN model, what they're doing? What, they're using some formula or something?
They're using some control equations,
yeah.
Control theory equations. So the performance application output is a function of for past output versus recent and past allocations.
Yeah, but what is the function?
That's
this one. So the regressive moving average function. I mean, okay. I always have to review the different types of approaches. Some of them are based on current theory, some are based on control theory, and some are based on machine learning. Right, so yours and also my previous work, unfortunately, they are all based on machine learning. Right? I think it's really hard to say which one, which type of approach is better, but they have their advantages, pros and cons. Typically, what I say about control theory-based approach is that the advantage is they do not assume any existing knowledge of the system's internal model. Okay, but you do have to assume some kind of model between the control parameters and the observed parameters, and most of them they use linear model, like what this paper did. Okay, and then you have to use some kind of system identification method to find out those parameters, to train the parameters. Okay, now most of the time they're using this square root error method. That's the basic approach, but you can be more advanced. You can do the do system identification online, and then you can do the identification adaptively, like what this paper did. So today they're not assuming the entire model is linear, but it's more like a piecewise mean linear. Okay, so that sort of covers their base, but still it's based on the assumption that the system is more or less linear. Yeah, that's something I typically use to differentiate the control theory based approach and the machine learning based approach. Because with the machine learning approach, you don't have to assume anything about the internal model. Because the model is purely
derived.
Yeah, from the data, from the observed data, and it can be highly nonlinear. That's what I typically the argument I usually use.
Yeah, I think what these control theory guys will probably argue is that maybe it's not realistic to construct a model because the model is too complex, right?
Yeah, but so that's a really a qualitative argument, right? It's not a quantitative argument. But the machine learning guys will say we have so advanced machine learning method, we can learn everything because the data is there, right? And so I think it would be hard to quantitatively compare with the control theory based method. Maybe both of them work well, and then they work in different scenarios. Maybe in some theories control theory is better, in some theories machine learning is better. So I think if we can, I'm not saying that you don't have to compare that, but I think if we can just qualitatively compare these two different approaches, then maybe that's sufficient. It's really a battle that nobody can win. It's totally two different schools of thoughts.
But we can compare it quantitatively, right? If we can train both models.
Yeah, but the argument may be more different scenarios. Maybe machine learning is better, but maybe in some scenarios, well, control theory is better. Well, they did the experiment too, right? And in that experiment, they were perfect. So that's just my question. But maybe it's not worth to spend a lot of time. Again, you do need to spend some time to implement it.
This was published in Neurosis?
No. They have so many papers on this kind of project from the same group.
Uh-huh.
I think it's 5 to 10 papers. Oh. It started very long, a long time ago, I think. Started from the utility data center
case.
Yeah.
That's also Neurosis.
Yeah, but that group produced many papers, but then it went away. It died, the project died.
And which one?
The utility data center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was the first generation papers that was considering using virtualization.
Mm-hmm.
And
data center.
Yeah, anomaly techniques for data center resource management. Yeah, but
mm-hmm.
it didn't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And many people from that group left HP,
mm-hmm.
including Xiaoyun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think a reviewer might actually ask us to compare these two techniques, right? So, and if we have enough workloads, maybe we show that for some workloads, ANN does better, for other workloads, control theory does better, then everyone is happy.
That will be a very good contribution if we have time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a good idea to ask these guys for the code for their implementation.
I think the comparison itself will be successful probably.
The comparison
between these two.
I think so.
I don't think that just that the comparison will be just a site experimental section for online updation of his model. Because comparison to this thing is so diverse and so complicated that that itself will be a separate paper, like a comparison of machine-based learning versus control theory in virtualized machine. Modeling, something like that.
We also put
Queen
theory into the
field.
That's also another good thought.
So maybe he can focus on just on his part. He can use the AI model to build his thing. But on the side, he can just take a couple of other approaches like queuing theory or the control theory and then do another paper kind of thing. To compare across all those things.
I think there would probably be sufficient material for a full paper just to do the comparative study.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering about what the USENIX reviewer might look for, given these past studies also.
For this one, I think we can just do qualitative argument.
Then that would be okay. People understand, and that's how...
If it is too completely two different approaches, people don't... mind that much.
You see, nobody has done this kind of comparison. Nobody has compared the computer theory-based approach to machine learning-based approach, because it's always hard. So I don't think reviewers will be very picky on that. As long as we can give a strong quantitative arguments. But on the other hand, if we can do a thorough comparison, that is a very good situation. Nobody has done.
But that itself will be a lot, so much work that
will deserve a good paper. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then we should probably talk about the incremental inroads to the
machine learning or ANN.
So what do we have? We have a pre-built model that exists that can predict performance at this point. And it has some accuracy, right? And then you keep making predictions. Maybe the accuracy degrades. Could also improve, of course, but it could degrade. And then maybe at some point, if the accuracy degrades sufficiently enough, we declare the model to be no longer correct.
But when the accuracy will degrade?
The accuracy will degrade as we make changes.
Changes to what?
To the resource allocation.
But the model has already captured that resource allocation.
Yeah, but we'd also observe the
performance
from the production. Okay. If that doesn't match or that differ by a sufficient amount,
okay,
we call it we need to update.
Okay. Not immediately. There should be some threshold value.
Threshold value, exactly.
Yeah, so we have a threshold of accuracy that is threshold tolerance for how much accurate we want the model predictions to be, and if it degrades below that threshold, then we figure out how to update the model, because the model no longer captures accurately enough the performance of the application.
Okay.
Because something changed. Maybe the logic of the application changed. Maybe the load changed. Maybe the computing stuff changed. You know, anything could have changed.
So that's what he is focusing for, the USENIX?
Yeah, so, I mean, ideally I want the USENIX paper to be sort of a complete solution, right, which is that we have a data center solution for dynamic resource reallocation of
virtual
machine.
Yeah, virtual
machine resources with the goal of, SLA.
Maybe. I was thinking maybe we can keep aside the online application and just focus on the algorithm, implement the algorithm, then update the allocation based on the algorithm, actual implementation of the algorithm.
So assuming that the model stays the same?
If
the model stays the same, then there is no reason to make resource reallocation, right?
No, there is a reason to reset the reallocation because the application demand is changing.
I mean, the load is changing.
The load is changing. That's why you need to do the resource allocation.
But in some sense, our model is, has a load built in. That's the problem. I mean, if the load changes, then the model must change. Otherwise, there is no other parameter that changes, right? So, in some sense, the load is... So, we talked about three different alternatives the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe you can talk about that.
No, first of all, what we have right now, we have, in all our my experiments, the load is constant. Push node.
What do you mean by load?
Load is the application logic.
Input.
Or
workload.
So workload remains constant. What I changed is the allocation. So what happens if the workload changes? In that case, under the same resource allocation, we may have different application output.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if local changes, yeah, you have to retrain the model.
Alternatively, we had like three different alternatives.
That's we have. So what we could do to update is that first we could use workload as an input to our ANN, some sort of representation of workload, or the input of the workload as an input of the ANN.
Additional parameter
of the ANN and train the model based on that. So in that case, if the input changes, the model will automatically tell you.
I thought you were already using some kind of parameters from the application at the input.
From the IO.
From IO.
For the IO, yeah.
What application?
The IO. IO is an offset parameter, so it's sort of input.
Yeah, but the IO is a competing IO.
But not the application IO.
No, it's the competing IO.
So now you take nothing from the application.
That application, you can take that.
Okay, all right.
So that's the first approach. The second approach is to change the model continuously based on the changes in the application dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Or based on observation of resource utilization, if we see that there are certain change in resource utilization of the application, we retrain the model. That's the second, and the third is the experiment based.
Experiment based. What is that? What is the experiment based?
Experiment based was the contribution of this paper is that you make the actual experiment.
Oh, that's just fine.
Yeah. I think that was the third three approaches.
Oh, you mean retrain the model completely? Retrain the model completely from scratch. Yeah, but that's sort of worse than the incremental updating of the model. I think there was something else. Anyway, so...
But if you try to update the online model, and separation of the workload changes, then how do you find out all the different values of the allocation for that workload?
That's true, yeah. So it's not trivial to update the model online. Because we have a model that captures the influence or the effect of all possible resource allocations on the observed performance, right? And at this point in time, we are only observing the performance of a specific allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So if we try to retrain the entire model with a data point that is only valid for a portion of the model, then I don't know if the way we update the model is going to be accurate or not.
Yeah. Let's say we have this scenario.
Can I take your seat?
Yes. So let's say, because we are doing incremental changes to our resource allocation, right? So let's say we are at the current operating point. There are 4 VMs. And it has its resource allocation. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or CPU memory and IO.
Mm-hmm.
So we for sure know that we are, as we are doing incremental updates, we are restricted to some values of CPU from its current location, from its current memory location, and from IO. What you could do is that before going through a dynamic next level of applying algorithm, what you could do, we train the model based on the parameters here, not on the entire range.
But the application through application load is different, isn't it? Application load.
No, but we also have the application, some sort of application load here. So application load won't change from, let's say, 100% in a single interval. It will be on the same level here, some sort of proximity. I mean, the application load will not...
What you're saying is that build only a partial model.
Build only a partial model based on the current operating point.
Uh-huh. So you try different allocations around that...
Around that operating point. Let's say we have a CPU of 20. We don't need to predict CPU of what will be the percentage, what will be the application output of CPU of 80. We could just restrict to 30 to then to 10.
But then the average can only apply to that range, right?
That range, but in the next interval, if that changes, we need to change the model as well. So that sort of thing will go parallelly or incrementally. We first apply the algorithm. We first change the model, we apply the algorithm, then again change the model, then again apply the algorithm for the next interval.
So what's happening is that we are ending up, when we do these incremental updates, the model that we are getting as a result of the update, it makes sense only for a partial operation domain, right? A partial set of resource allocation values.
We don't really need to do, if we need to constantly update that model, we don't really need to do a complete modeling of the application.
We don't need to, but then the real question is, why have a full model of the application in the first place? What is the need for it, right? Why not just have these sort of partial models and keep moving from one partial model to the next partial model as we need it?
Initially, you need a full model. But this makes sense for your...
dynamic updation.
Yeah, because we have constraints that the resource allocation cannot be changed too much. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If we only train between that range, then that makes sense. Because we are going to vary the allocation in that range. And that range is guaranteed to be updated.
So it's sort of the same approach as they have with the allocation, but with the machine learning. It's not with the control theory equation, it's with the artificial neural network within a short span.
Now, the real question is that, are we rebuilding a model from scratch or not? Right? Are we using anything from before, or
no.
We are using...
In it's really hard to differentiate between the recent or past value. Otherwise, the model will throw bad results.
But still, even you just train for that range, don't you have to repeat the application many times around that in that range? How to do that? Even if you can just train that range, how to train? Now you're building your model by running the applications again, with different resource allocation, right? So even say your range has only 5 values, you have to run the application 5 times. Offline, right?
Offline.
Yeah.
I guess what you're saying is that run it online. So make the change, observe it, and then change it back again, and observe it again. I mean, could make these online changes to the allocations. So sort of, in the way I see it as a sort of autonomous system where the system is used to doing a certain kind of activity, but then it's the activity requirements change. So in order for the system to learn how to adapt to this new activity, it sort of makes some small experiments, right? If I do this, this is the result. If I do this, and then given that, I'm going to make, after I collect all that information, I'm going to make the final decision, which hopefully it's going to last for a longer period of time, right? So you do these mini changes quickly to learn how...
Or we could have a cloned environment just like just run it. And we don't change it, just have a cloned environment here.
Mm-hmm.
That would be difficult because you have to not just clone that single virtual machine, you have to clone all the virtual machines.
That's not possible.
If you want to capture the computation.
I think it may be easier for you to take the workload as another parameter to the neural network model and see how that goes.
That's what we did for the fuzzy modeling approach.
Mm-hmm.
It took the workload characteristics as input along with the resource consumption. But in your case, you have a resource allocation.
Okay. This is a bit complex. At the same time, I mean, even for the original modeling work that we showed was highly accurate, we haven't really validated that with real workloads. We just had the synthetic workload that creates competing IO. We haven't done it with multiple VMs.
Postmark and OLTP is sort of real workload. It's not very synthetic workload.
No. What I mean is that for competing workloads, we always had synthetic workloads. We didn't have real competing workloads.
Okay.
Right. So one aspect of this paper could also be that a more thorough evaluation of the original HPCA paper, where we did stuff only with synthetic computing workloads.
Okay,
with
the computing workloads.
I mean, if you have multiple VMs,
yes, exact workloads. Yeah, exactly. So we haven't sort of evaluated our model in that setting.
No.
So that's one thing. You know, we are assuming that the accuracy that we see with the synthetic computing workloads will also be observed in.
In the real, I think that needs to be done. Otherwise, there will be a step jump, and you may have to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It should work because the synthetic workload you use is more intensive, right? It's more intensive than regular workload. So if it works on for those kind of challenges at times, it should work better.
Yeah, but the only difference is in this case the workload will change because synthetic the workload was altered.
I see. Okay. Fine.
He has to quit.
Okay.
So think about different allocation and
yeah.
The workload is changing and there will be another graph from his model and how these two graphs will go.
So background use is constant. It's constant background workload.
Yes, that may be. So I guess it seems like alternatives are to add the additional parameter, workload related parameter to the model. And train the model
with those additional parameters.
In the same way, but with this additional parameter.
But with the multiple VM, I'll say.
What?
With the multiple VM.
With the multiple VMs. Also, then if you want to train it with the workload parameter, we need to change the workload also.
Yeah.
Right, so we train the model directly.
Yeah.
So what do you have as a workload?
Yeah, it's typical TPC benchmarks. Those the commercial benchmark, TPC.
TPCC or TPCW?
All of them. TPCC, TPCW, TPCH. Well, for all of those benchmarks, you can take and this request rate at the input, but there may be more characteristics you have to extract.
Those are implemented. You don't need to worry about that.
What are these guys using as workloads?
TPCW
and Rubies.
And Rubies. Yeah, my student is using Rubies now. Rubies is okay, too.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's kind of outdated. TPCW is outdated, too. But it's very similar to TPCW. I don't see much difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so so one option is to add a new parameter to the model. The other one is this sort of submodel and updating the submodel with either making changes online or making changes sort of in a mirror environment, right? In a cloned environment.
If you make changes online, in that small range, right? But then one thing is the system will fluctuate because you are doing trials at different resource mm-hmm. allocation parameters. And the second thing is people may argue that why don't you just assume a median model in that small range?
Mm-hmm. Like these guys, yeah.
So in some sense, I mean, the reason why we need the complexity of the ANN is because we are trying to model the whole range and of parameters and behaviors on the.
So, I'm not saying that you need to do exactly what we did before, but just give you an idea of how we did it. We kind of different from the way you use AN. Okay, so we just take the input, right? The input, which is the worker characteristics, right? The simplest case is the request rate. And then we take the resource consumption. We take these two dimensions as but each dimension can be multiple dimensions. We take these two dimensions as the input to train the model that captures the relationship between these two inputs. Okay. So, and this training is done purely online based on whatever data you have. Okay, because as the workload starts, it may start from very low intensity and then grows to a relatively high intensity. And then with those range of data, you can use a model in that range, right? And then, so basically, whenever we have some data, you assume that the model is what you can find out from that set of data.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you detect that model is incorrect, okay, then you update the model. Actually, we are updating model continuously. So whenever there are new data coming in, which means the data may represent an unknown behavior of the system that we haven't found out yet, and then we use that data to update this model.
But the model is a full comprehensive model, or
it grows as more data become available.
But then you do not discard any of the past points.
You can discard if it's really ancient data, and you think that maybe that ancient data may bias your current prediction. You
mm-hmm.
can if you can set a window size, but not necessarily.
And what kind of is like a ANN model again?
We use Fuzzy model, similar to ANN.
Mm-hmm.
It's not similar, but it's also a advanced machine learning technique that can model nonlinear behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's based on utilization, though.
The best based on utilization.
Based on utilization.
Sure.
So utilization and some input parameters, you get a predicted performance.
Right.
Yeah, so the thing about the input parameter is that it may not be easy to capture the input parameter
in a production
environment, right?
Well, for service, for business services, those kind of internet services, like web server, application server, database server, it is possible.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, first of all, request rate is always there.
Mm-hmm.
And then for HTTP requests, for instance, you can different types of HTTP requests. Some are static, some are dynamic. And for dynamic ones, you can also differentiate them. Some are getting data from this, some are getting data from backend database. So there are ways that you can do. But I haven't seen anybody that has done that complex
mm-hmm.
experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's possible. And for database service, it's possible. And that's actually what we are doing now. It's possible to classify queries based on their patterns. And then you can use the different types of queries to represent the whole workload. For this kind of application, it's possible. But for scientific computing application, that will be more challenging. You see, there's no direct relationship between the input and the workload, and then the resource intensity.
Yeah, like you said, the workload parameter is not a single value.
It's not a single
parameter, but it could be more complex than that.
Yeah.
But in business application, we can mostly consider that it's a single parameter.
Okay. Maybe more than that, because if you request rate most of the time, right? So, you may have a different kind of request. So some are more CPU intensive, some are more IO intensive. Right? You want to capture both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think single request rate is not enough.
So that also sort of makes the technique more intrusive because you need to do additional monitoring for,
mm-hmm. yes.
for capturing the input workload.
True. So what we are using now is we set up proxy in front of the actual service
mm-hmm.
so you can capture the information. Sometimes you can
if a database, for instance, you can turn log in and you can dig out the information from logs, that's
mm-hmm.
very possible. The other way is to set up proxy. That always works, right? Web, be it a web server proxy or a database server proxy, you can always do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just capture that information and forward it.
I mean, for instance, access to database logs may not be possible if you're doing a hosted service, right? Means because that
mm-hmm.
database belongs to your client, who may not give you access to those
mm-hmm.
kinds of information.
So, but the you can always use a proxy.
Mm-hmm.
Proxies, it's a
it maybe is more accurate to classify the request, but I believe that it is possible because the application behavior is more or less kind of it doesn't change drastically. So if you take that for a particular application, if you take the workload as a request per second, then probably that can be applied in the as you go kind of thing. Just the request per second is enough because it will not happen that suddenly the database per request increased by 90%. Most of the requests are coming from the database. It will not be like that.
Yeah, so then you have to assume that basically the workload composition is steady.
Yeah,
that's the assumption you have to make.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah, so that's actually what we did in our previous paper. So now we are trying to make it more complicated, more challenging.
Yeah.
Right. So
because, for example, if you take this, even the TPCW, the behavior is pretty well defined. That okay, this is the private browsing behavior,
right,
the shopping
right,
behavior.
Right.
It's pretty
well. Yeah, yeah. So that's actually how we did how we do experiment now. We run the three different mixes.
Exactly.
Sequentially, so you are seeing the change of pattern, and then you have to capture the composition and also the input.
And it is definitely the data exists in terms of in an online retail site, how much is the percentage of browsing, how much is the percentage of the shopping. So those data doesn't change drastically.
Right.
So probably if you define your application well, I'm focusing on this particular type of application only, it may be possible that you can just fly by with the single parameter, maybe just the request per second.
This input parameter, however, does not change the changes in the, let's say, application logic, for instance. If there is some modification to the application that is being made, or maybe...
If there is a modification in the application, or if there is any drastic change in the behavior of the user, then of course you have to remodel it.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's what I'm saying is that the addition of this new workload parameter does not necessarily preclude the online updating. So
no.
You might still have to do online
updates. Yeah,
And then the question is, what do we do with the online updates? Right? How do we do the online updates?
Well, if we do it in the same way we are using fuzzy modeling, I think it's pretty much the same. Right? You just take whatever data you have, and you train that piece of the model. And then as this more data become available, then the full picture becomes available of the model. And whenever there's some problem with the prediction, right, then you what we are doing now is some beta policy to recover from the bad prediction, and then we take new data in and update model immediately to try to refine the new behavior, or maybe some missing information that we don't have yet. So I think AI can be played in the same way, but maybe you want to play different.
No, if you take the single parameter, the online updation is definitely possible. You can say that if I deviate too much, then I will run the model with the existing. I will run the model with the existing workload distribution.
It doesn't have to be a single parameter. The only problem is
with the single parameter versus multi-parameter, because of multiple parameter, because the kind of thing that having a database proxy to monitor those things or having a proxy, those kind of things, it's very difficult in the real life situation, really.
So, for request rate, you have to have some some kind of proxy to get that.
It is very difficult to map the request to the whether the request is CPU intensive or whether the request is DDoS intensive. It's very difficult to map that because it's so complex. Like you call a servlet, from servlet you call a Java bean, from server bean you call a web service, and from there you call two database calls. It becomes too complex, actually.
I think there's information, telling information there. Like you said, GPC dev, they're browsing, they're shopping, and what's the next one? I don't know. So browsing is just read only. You just get HTTP requests. Okay. So get HTTP requests that are read only. So that can be one parameter. And then if it's selling or I don't know, bidding or selling, and those involve post requests. And those are updates, those include writes. Right. So the user some impression of these two types of requests are very different.
Mm-hmm. Then you're talking about classifying the request on the basis of the type of the actions.
Yeah.
Not in terms of what resource it is accessing.
Yeah. If there's a connection there, then we can leverage whatever knowledge that is available there, right?
So that is another way of.
But I think if we make too much knowledge, if we don't know too much, we'll lose our claim that we are application agnostic.
Sure. Yeah.
What do you mean by application agnostic?
Because we say that our model is application agnostic. We don't need much information from application. But if we know about request type, request specifics of applications, then we are going into too much detail.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. Yeah. So you're more along the line of a black box approach. Right? So what we are doing is we are thinking maybe gray box. That's exactly what we are doing.
Okay. So one thing which seems obvious is that updating the full model in an online fashion is not a good idea because we introduce inaccuracies into the model with partial information, right? So the question is, can we build sub-models and use just sub-models and update these sub-models in an online fashion? And because the amount of inaccuracy that we introduce to sub-model is going to be much smaller than to the entire model. So that could be one direction if we want to retain our application agnosticity. We'll talk about building sub-models. And these sub-models, I think then the question is how much complexity do we need for the sub-models? Do we need an ANN or do we need something simpler? Right.
Because sub-model, I don't think you need an ANN, because if you're going with sub-model, you're almost can assume a linear, piecewise linear behavior.
The parameters, so these guys also use resource allocation parameters, right?
Yeah.
Not resource utilization.
I believe they assume the piecewise linear.
That's
what the controller would be true.
So then we have maybe too much similarity to this.
Too much similarity with the.
This, if we go with the sub-model approach, right? Because what we are targeting then is to just make predictions that are very similar to the current for the current resource allocations than for the whole space.
Yeah. If anything is out of the picture, then it's going to be bashing it.
Maybe what we could do in that case is just focus on the development of the online algorithm and use their technique to build the full system.
That's another way of doing
it. So, I mean, the resource reallocation algorithm, because there perhaps we have novelty.
Yeah. Our goal is different.
But we are using their model, sort of incremental model, as just one of the things within the
I think that is orthogonal with the what kind of prediction technique will be used. But
mm-hmm.
you can use this, you can use mine too. So
mm-hmm.
you can use fuzzy modeling. So
mm-hmm.
That is, yeah, I think that's a unique contribution. Yeah, if we can make this.
I mean, what we really need is a prediction mechanism.
Yeah. I'm sorry I have to leave, but
yeah.
I'm at 30. After another meeting.
Okay, so why don't we work on, so have you worked on implementation of the algorithm that you started?
Not much yet. It's started.
Okay, so that might be a good thing to do right
now.
Yeah,
I will do it right. It's not, it don't take that much time.
Yeah, I think you might want to start with just a simple evaluation with the data that you already have. Right. And see how you do with that, and I mean assuming a static model and see whether your algorithms actually work
and
a static model.
As I was working on that GitHub, as I mentioned, I did some research on that side, but I still think that existing algorithms may be possible to be adaptive to solve your problem.
Do you have sort of any specific
source? There are a few papers. Yeah, there are a few papers. So in that workshop submission, we sort of dodged that question.
Mm-hmm.
And but if you're using this, we definitely have to have a good answer to it.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I remember you sent one paper.
That's a very good survey paper. Yeah.
So. Why don't we discuss that during one of our meetings?
Paper club.
We could do paper club also. Yeah.
It's an aspect. It will be close to everybody, I think.
Okay, yeah, we could do paper club.
Yeah.
But we need to certainly think about if we can use...
But I think our algorithm, my algorithm or our algorithm is a lot simpler than...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, most of those existing algorithms are based on dynamic programming. They are definitely more complicated.
I mean, to implement those things, it takes a real lot of time. And then, because the algorithm is a pseudo code, hides a lot of details. So if you go into implementation, it would be really huge.
Yeah, so with your opinion may be correct, but we have to sort of prove it in the paper.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Because
like the lines of code or something.
Or just runtime,
whatever
it is. I mean, you might very well be right in your claims, but in the paper we need proof, right?
Optimality, efficiency, and optimality. Those you have to compare.
Okay, so yeah, start thinking about those questions as to how you can use some of those algorithms, and if yes, then how do we compare it against ours? And in which way are we better, in which way are we worse? We need to talk about both. Right.
We can try to ask the authors for their
mm-hmm.
code.
Mm-hmm.
We can match.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay, thank you.
So, Sajib, you're working on the algorithm and...
Yeah, I'll work on the implementation.
Implementation and also the other knapsack solutions to see if
you can take the estimation as a black box. Move that as a function estimation, because what you need is just some input and getting the response back. What is the expected throughput? That's what you need, right, for the algorithm.
Yeah, for his algorithm, but I think there are also similar, maybe knapsack solutions that can be used for the
NAPSAC
same purpose.
Solution, necessarily, there may be some similar NAPSAC problem, but the beauty of the NAPSAC is that lots of variations exist, and even the lots of variations are coming up.
Mm.
Because it's very difficult to map one variation with the other variation.
Mm. Yeah, so I guess the point is that maybe someone has already proven some optimality results with the approximate versions, right, to say, okay, this is...
Optimality proof is mathematically to do the optimal proof is beyond the scope of our expertise. It's
no, but I'm saying that maybe someone in the theory domain has already done this approximation algorithms with proof that, okay, this is within so much of the optimal.
Oh, yeah. There are proofs.
And if there are such algorithms out there, then we should probably contrast those algorithms with our algorithm.
The typical way it can be done is you apply the brute force or the optimal, find the optimal, and you apply your algorithm, and then you measure the what is the difference for your algorithm. And there are existing data that, okay, for knapsack, what is the typical range? I believe it's a 3/4 or something like that. It's 5% to 4% or 3% something gap between the optimal and the existing knapsack algorithms.
Yeah, but for this specific variant of knapsack, I mean, maybe the bounds are different, maybe the...
It will not be that difficult, different, because the approach is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
All the knapsack algorithm, basic approach is that gritty one. And there is a paper that actually has that's a classic paper that has really demonstrated that gritty heuristic for the knapsack has a bound of 2.5% or 3%, something like that. Really.
I see.
So they proved that. And everyone is... just rely on that. So if you have a variation of the knapsack, if you go by the greedy heuristic and just demonstrate, okay, what is the gap, that's
mm-hmm.
the way it goes.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think implementing that algorithm and comparing that with the optimal thing, optimal is very important right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, so let's start with that and we'll see how we are doing. Okay.
Well, anyway, we can discuss the survey paper.
Yeah, we should discuss the survey paper. Okay, all right.
Okay.
See ya.